Hi everyone, welcome back to In Their Own League podcast. I'm Bea Garner and I hope you're doing well so far in this crazy time that is 2020. Joining me today on this short but sweet podcast, I've got the wonderful Joan.
Howdy.
How are you doing, Joan? Getting ready for Halloween, I hear.
We're doing it slowly but surely. We're just doing the big rollout of the decorations out here.
Awesome. And joining us as well is Morgan.
Hello.
How are you doing? Up to much?
Doing well. Just very, very busy with work and taking a little bit of a respite from time to time by watching a Halloween movie to get in the spirit.
I love it. And last but not least, it's the podcast wizard himself. It's Stephen.
Hello, everybody. I've come from behind my huge mixing desk to spend some time with my favourite people.
You grace us with your presence.
You feel honoured, gentlefolk.
So I just thought this would be a nice little podcast catch up to see how everyone's doing and just check in to see what you've been watching. So I'm going to throw it over to Morgan and just see if you've been watching anything good recently, if you've got any recommendations that you can share with us and our listeners at home.
Absolutely. So actually last night, Misbehavior was released in the United States. It was released in cinemas for a hot minute in the UK before the inevitable COVID shutdown. So there wasn't really an idea when it would come out to the States, even though it's been playing at a few film festivals. And it was fantastic. I could not find a single error with it. And so I can't wait to watch it again this weekend.
And is that, I haven't had a chance to see it, but judging from the trailer, it looked like it was kind of, like a, you know, just standard British, affair, really. Like the films that you sort of can watch with your mom and your grandma, and it's like, you know, there's something there for everyone. Was it that sort of type of movie, or was it a bit more edgier?
It was a little bit more, so like a companion piece to it would probably be the film Pride, where right. It really captures a singular moment in British history that then became a catalyst for a movement. So the whole thing is a group of women boycott and kind of staged a protest at the 1970 Miss Universe contest. Mm-hmm. And that really sparked the ongoing kind of second wave of feminism and women's liberation movement in the UK. And it has Keira Knightley, Jessie Buckley, who's just off of I'm Thinking of Ending Things. You know, it top to bottom is an incredible cast. And it was really enjoyable film to watch.
I was about to say, it's not a period piece unless Keira Knightley's in it.
I know. Well, you know, it's a little bit more modern for her than normal, but it is still 50 years ago when that happened.
Yeah. I watched Official Secrets last year, and I was like, oh, it's Keira Knightley in a sort of contemporary film. That's something you don't really see nowadays.
Yeah, anything that takes place both, like after World War II, it just is very odd to see her in that. But I'm glad that she's being able to finally shift away from all the corsets and high society type dramas.
Was there anything else that you managed to squeeze in?
I'm trying to think. I've been watching Game of Thrones for a first time watch.
Oh,
and that's been really interesting in a 2020 perspective of things that they really got away with in 2011. But we're getting to the more, it kind of feels like a reality TV show It's very dramatic and overdramatic, and definitely borders on very inappropriate because it's two men who are writing a lot of the stories, and there's really great female characters that if there had been women in the writing room could have been handled more delicately or empowered more. And yeah, I also am getting really confused with all the like brown-haired white men. I can't tell them apart.
How far into it are you?
I just started season two.
Okay. Oh, you're not even into like...
Yeah, you're going to find actually the first season is very different. It becomes a little more episodic in some ways, but there are some really strong female characters that come through. And indeed, but by the end of it, the women are the victors all round, really. So that's interesting that you should say that. But knowing that you've only really watched the first season.
Yeah, I mean,
to me,
that's very.
It is. It's middle-aged white English men chopping each other's heads off, isn't it?
Yeah, it's that, and it's just a bunch of, you know, you have really strong characters in Cersei and Daenerys and Sansa, even in season one, but they are continually reduced to these gender roles, and not in a like delicate way, not in a way of like challenging it. They're just reduced to it because, you know, they have to let Ned Stark be Nancy Drew for several episodes. So they have to reduce the women and, you know, they have to have battle scenes. So why are we going to care about women doing much of anything? So
wait until Brian gets involved. She's the best.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that it improves.
It really does. About the
well, it improves and then it goes downhill.
Oh,
so.
Don't bother watching the last season at all.
I'm going to complete it in all of its faults. I'm going to watch it from start to finish.
I did something very similar to you, Morgan. I kind of missed all the hype about it, and I watched like the first five seasons before watching it in real time in a sort of a big binge watch session a few years ago, and I was firstly I thought, what's all the fuss about? but I'm going through it because I don't really like fantasy stuff normally, but I do like dragons, so there's a
yeah, they finally showed
yes.
up.
There's a bit of a weird thing for you. But yeah, no, it really does improve, but as B says, yeah, don't get too attached to it.
Yeah, don't get attached to anyone.
No. Well, there's one Mary Sue character, but apart from that, yeah, don't get attached to anybody.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to check in with you later and see how you respond to the later season.
We'll see once I really get into the thick of it. So
awesome. Well, anything else at all?
No, that's pretty much what I've been able to manage the past few weeks. So I'll report back once I'm maybe another season or two deep into Game of Thrones.
Awesome. Over to you then, Joan. Have you been watching anything good recently?
Well, this weekend I finally got to see the new documentary by Rick Burns of Civil War fame from PBS. About Oliver Sacks, who was a famous American and British neurologist. And that was fantastic. I was really looking forward to seeing it. I really admire Oliver Sacks. So I was thrilled about being able to finally see this. I was really anticipating it. And my review will be coming shortly. Other than that, I've been watching, in the spirit of Halloween, Lovecraft Country. I don't know if anyone else has been watching it. Wow. It's got to be one of the wackiest, craziest, off-the-wall series I've ever seen in my life. It's just, you really want to just pause the streaming for a while and just stare at the screen just to figure out what is going on. It's amazing. It's incredible. But I don't know how Lovecraftian it really is, to be honest with you. It's incredible as far as if you like horror and if you like suspense, but not exactly slithering nameless horrors from outer space or anything to that effect. But fantastic cast. Oh, the acting is just off the wall incredible. So really enjoying it. It's just not quite what I expected, but I don't think it's what anybody expects. Every episode is something you shake your head and say, what did I just see?
You've really made me interested, Jane, because I was sort of looking at it and thought, ooh, because I like a bit of Lovecraft, you know, sort of a bit of creeping terror behind the scenes, you know, like The Lighthouse, that was a Lovecraftian film, yeah.
Exactly.
And I thought, oh, yeah. But then I started reading some reviews of it and thinking, oh, it's a bit slow. Oh, I don't really like, you know, and I saw some really sort of middling reviews, so I went away from it. But now you've said that, I'm back on board again.
The acting is just, oh, wow. It's just amazing. They should just be locking up all the awards for the cast. It's just mind-bogglingly great. But the stories themselves, I've never read the book, and I didn't want to read it before the series because I didn't want to spoil it. So I don't know how far from Lovecraft the book strays. But if you've read Lovecraft, you know he's into about a paragraph of description that really doesn't tell you anything about the monsters he's describing. And I don't see any of these, maybe the first couple of episodes there were some slithering monsters, but they've kind of walked away from that. And now it's like, okay, well, there's less Lovecraft and more, you know, I would say almost occult, but not really. So they're going into more like the occult stories of Lovecraft, where they're hunting down information that could lead to unleashing maybe the nameless slithering horrors. So I don't know where this is going to go. I really don't. It's just really, it has to be seen to be believed. It's incredible. But as far as the relevant issues of social issues that they're discussing, oh, wow. Oh, it's amazing. It's just, you really should say it. It's just incredible for what they're doing with a TV show. You would never imagine that a series could be so dense and so relevant. And wow. I mean, the acting, like I said, oh, wow. Just mind-blowing. Last episode, we kind of steered away and did some Korean mythology, Stephen, which I know you like Asian themes and Asian film. So last episode was a Korean mythology of horror, which was really fascinating and cool. So that was incredible. So yeah, check it out. It's been wild.
Yeah.
It's a wild ride.
I'll have to check it out too. Sounds amazing.
So other than that, and film festival watching, which has been incredible, that's what I've been doing.
Is there anything that you've seen festival wise that you has caught your attention?
I tell you, I was sensing a theme, and I don't know of everybody else who's been watching film festival selections. Maybe it's just the choices I made of what I wanted to review, but I'm sensing a theme in the movies I have seen, that there's a lot of plot of the films I've seen revolving around mental illness and people coping with it. And I don't know if anyone else has seen that, but it seems like this is the theme for 2020, where I've seen a lot of films with women in particular struggling with mental illness in different genres. There was a horror film that I saw with a woman who was struggling with mental illness. There was a thriller I saw it with a woman struggling with mental illness, and there was a really great story of a young girl struggling with depression that was just about her life. So it just seems like this reoccurring theme. And again, it might be what I chose to review, but I don't know. Has anyone else who's been involved in film festivals sensed that mental illness seems to be the theme for 2020? Not maybe it's very surprising, but there is a lot of that out there going on.
Yeah, I mean, mostly I've been covering Sheffield Documentary Film Festival, so I've been watching a lot of documentaries that kind of deal with women's issues, and there has been, you know, documentaries that have touched on mental illness, but I'm just thinking, I saw obviously Shirley at Berlin, that's very much to do with mental health, and the other films that I don't know really whether there's the ones that I seek out are necessarily normal. I try and go for films that are a bit more happier, really, because but it's very hard to find them nowadays. Everything's very sort of serious.
Shirley was amazing. Elizabeth Moss was just blow the doors off, incredible.
Yes.
It was just, wow. You could just set her down on a stage alone and have her do that, in a one-woman show. She was just so powerful. She was just amazing. And the difficulty of the subject matter, I mean, Shirley Jackson was a difficult person, no doubt about it, but to make her, really sympathetic and you really feel for her, I mean, that was amazing. She was really incredible, and I really hope she gets an acknowledgement for some kind of nomination, because she deserves it so much. I mean, this has really been, between that and Invisible Man, she's been on a high these days. She's just really running with it.
Yeah, she's been incredible. I mean, I liked her in Her Smell, a film that came out last year, which has been, she's just been fantastic. So I think she's one of those actresses that seem to just get forgotten about, really. So hopefully that, she's just proving.
And yet she's somewhat ubiquitous. She's in everything. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
She was in Us, wasn't she? She was in she did a second series in The Top of the Lake. She's in The Handmaid's Tale. She's in The Invisible Woman. I mean, she is. It's strange, isn't it? That you're right. Does she get a lot of the credit?
But yeah. But
she's absolutely ubiquitous in the last 5 or 6 years.
She keeps popping up, but I want her to be it's something that's why I was kind of glad that she was in The Invisible Man, which is a bit more mainstream. That's what I want her to be in films that are a bit more, get to a wider audience, because we all know her from these indie films and we know that she can act really well. So why is it that, she's not getting more attention? And
she's a bit like fellow Antipodean Toni Collette in lots of things and always fantastic. But are there many films which are a Toni Collette film or an Elizabeth Moss film?
Yeah.
As opposed to she's in this film and she's really good, is it?
Yeah. It's almost like the rest of the movie isn't so good, but she's good.
Exactly. Yeah. She can't give a bad performance. She really can't.
Yeah, and she was on Mad Men for 7 seasons doing incredible work there. And then her next kind of biggest TV project was The Handmaid's Tale. And, The Handmaid's Tale. And so that really kind of re-cemented the fact that not only can she act in those supporting roles, but has clearly the talent to be in a leading role as well.
Yeah, and I really need to get back into TV watching, because I need to watch The Handmaid's Tale. I know I should have watched it. I watched the first episode, and then I was like, I'm gonna watch the rest of it, but never got around to it.
I mean, it's not an easy one to binge. You definitely need a cool down walk after a couple of episodes.
That's the thing. I'm just like, the world is so depressing at the moment. I don't know whether I could actually handle the, something that heavy.
Yeah.
Awesome. So I'm gonna throw it over to you, Stephen. What have you been up to?
God. Right. No, it's not that bad. So I've been somewhat distracted the last couple of weeks.
Oh, really? Why? What's been happening in the world to distract you?
Oh, I've discovered, and it's thanks to you, actually. It's something you said on a previous podcast that I picked up on. I've discovered Parks and Recreation.
Yay!
And I've spent 2 weeks watching every single episode of it.
Love it.
And that's pretty much what I've been doing. And I don't know. And I'll talk about something else in a minute, which is also I love these sort of American sitcoms.
Yes.
I'm a huge fan of Seinfeld.
The Office.
Yeah. Both American and British. But these sort of long form sitcoms with Community is another one which I absolutely adore, but which have real character growth going on in them rather than sort of tea time comedies are sort of there's something more to them. And I just avoided Parks and Recreation, which is really weird because all the individual components, the actors and actresses, I love.
Yeah.
But I just don't know why. And you mentioned something. You probably won't even remember mentioning it, but you mentioned something about Aubrey Plaza, who I know from some other things like Legion and Ingrid Goes West.
Amazing.
And it's an amazing show. I think the first series is a bit difficult and awkward on finding its feet. But after that, every single episode, I adored it, and every single character. And what I found really interesting is that the two of the three lead female characters, their growth as people over, well, I mean, watching it all in 2 weeks probably isn't fair for someone who's gone 7 years, but it is remarkable hour by hour to watch these people change and their characters and the quality of the writing just improve step over step over step. I mean, I know some people have problems with the last season, but it's just amazing and quotable, and and Amy Poehler and Aubrey Plaza in particular are just fantastic, and Aubrey Plaza just grows.
I love her.
Like a butterfly. Yeah, the quality of the writing that she gets, and she, you know, what she goes from at the beginning, where she's a kind of throwaway character at the beginning, and as many of them are, and it's just a remarkable show, and I just think, how did I miss that? So thank you, Amazon Prime. And then I'm watching something on Apple TV, which isn't something I'd normally do, but I got 6 months free with my phone. Huh? And this is going to be something that won't be on any of your radars. And I'm surprised it was on mine, really. So it's an ongoing sort of dramedy, I suppose. Who's the fellow? What's the actor called? Jason Sudeikis's Ted Lasso, which basically is a follow-up to 7-year-old adverts he did for NBC Sports, where he basically has this character, this Ted Lasso character, who's an American football coach who comes to coach English. I'll call it soccer.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. I think I've heard of it.
These adverts are 7 years old and they're okay. Right. And he's done this. They've made the Apple obviously desperate for original content. and they've done this show. And obviously I'm a guy and I like football, blah, blah, blah. Oh, look, that's what originally attracted me to it. But what I was expecting was just one of these fish out of water things, both about Americans in England and football jokes and Americans not understanding football. It's not about that at all. It's remarkable. I mean, there's 10, 30 minute episodes. The final one hasn't come out yet, but it's really a show about divorce and about relationships, and Sudeikis is amazing in this character, which has not only is comedy, but he's this the pathos involved in his character it's amazing. So it's a classic American sitcom in the sense, yeah, there's a moral at the end of it and things like that, but most importantly there's these two female characters in it, one played by Hannah Waddingham and one played by, I've forgotten her name, Juno Temple, who on the face of it in any other show would have been very throwaway, very by the book. One of them is the female chairman and one of them is a wag. I don't know if you know what a wag is, right? And you would have thought they would have been very stereotypical characters. But actually, they're the best characters, and the writing is amazing, and their performances are amazing. And it's just this show that I think it's not funny enough. There aren't enough jokes in it, but there's so much more going on, and I've been absolutely blown away for it. And I'm delighted to hear that it's got a second season. It's just a shame it's hidden away on Apple TV, which I'm sure no one's watching.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's a shame that Apple TV hasn't really exploded in the way that I think they wanted it to.
I'm sure they invested a lot of money in it, but yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't, I mean, it's not a thing. I know none of you would have even picked up that it even existed, although it was quite heavily advertised. But it's, yeah, it's really, really good. And it's I'm going to be a bit sad next week when it's over.
Well, you have me at Jason Sudeikis, so I will definitely check that out.
Yeah, I mean, the first couple of episodes are a bit rocky and they're just replaying jokes from these adverts, which you can find on YouTube. But he's just brilliant. It's a ridiculous character, but it's very much based in a real world. And it's an American view of London. Yeah, that's not. It's a bit fake. but that's fine. But it's not outrageous jokes, and it's not a sports thing at all. So if that was
off
thinking that, you know, yes, it takes place in a football club, and yes, characters in it are footballers or soccer players, but that's not important. They could be anything. Yeah, it's almost like an office drama. But it's really good, and I really enjoyed it, and I'm glad to share the love.
Oh, okay. Well, you've sold me, so I'll try and check it out. Well, let me try and think what I've been watching. So I watched a documentary about Princess Diana on Netflix called Diana in Her Own Words, which was recordings of that Diana made with her friend who wrote a sort of tell-it-all book in the 90s, but sort of didn't disclose that it was Diana sort of spilling the beans about her marriage to Prince Charles. And I really found it quite fascinating, especially to sort of hear her side of the story, because you know, it was painted as this sort of magical Cinderella story. You know, I didn't realize that she was so young when she got married, and the way that she was sort of treated by the press was appalling, the media, and hearing her sort of reaction to it, because really she was a 19-year-old girl who was suddenly put into the limelight. And I was sort of thinking about how it would be now with social media, and how the media has now sort of how everyone has phones in their pocket, so you really, you know, if you are a celebrity, it is even worse to sort of have privacy. So that was such a interesting and eye-opening documentary, and I really enjoyed it. Talking about eye-opening, I also caught Cuties on Netflix. I still don't know what to make of it. I've got a lot of issues with that movie, which I will direct people to Kaz's really interesting article she wrote on the site. I also watched 16 Candles for the very first time. That film was really dated quite badly.
Yes.
There are a lot of problems with that movie.
Yes.
And I know I'm trying to put it in the context of the 1980s, but I still think, like, even the stuff they were doing in that movie, I don't think you really were able to get away with in the 80s. But, you know, that was before my time.
Don't all John Hughes movies kind of date kind of badly? But for those of us
who
grew up with them, I mean, those films of the 80s, were they're my formative VHS years, yeah. and you know, things like that, Pretty in Pink. I still love them, but when you go back and look at them, you think,
yeah, especially in like 2020 sort of
absolutely
retrospective
40 years later.
Well, the thing is, it's like I love The Breakfast Club, you know, but this was really quite a shock. There's a particular Asian character that I was just like, oh my god, this is awful. I was just like, this is so racist. I can't believe that they actually did this. Nobody sort of like, and you know, put it in a mainstream movie. It's incredible. But anyway, I still kind of liked it in some certain ways. It was kind of like, oh, to be young and the only thing you were worrying about was the fact that your parents forgot your birthday, you know, Whereas, like, nowadays we have way more problems to deal with. And I also caught I'm Thinking of Ending Things, which I really didn't like. I really didn't like that movie. I didn't have the patience for it. Perhaps I wasn't really in my right mindset to be watching that film, but I just watched it and I was just bored throughout. Like, the performances were great, but the movie was just so slow and so just pretentious that I just zoned out of it and just thought, like, I'm watching it just to see if anything good actually happens, but nothing really happens in that film, so that was a bit of a disappointment.
And from what I've heard, people who love the book it's based on are up in arms because they changed it.
Yeah.
So I don't think it, yeah, I think it's, I've seen a few good reviews of it, but I think a lot of people hate it.
Well, talking about, I just thought I would mention, I've been doing a lot of reading recently, and I recently read the book to Under the Skin, which is an incredible book. And, it, you know, the movie is really good. I do like the movie, but it's nothing like the book. And I kind of feel a bit like I really wish they had actually done a movie of what happens in the book, because there's some really great stuff in there. It's a completely different story. It, yeah, the only similarities that they share is the fact that there's an alien driving around the Scottish Highlands killing hitchhikers. That's it. The rest of it, there's two, it's almost like, you know, is it even, can you even say that it's based on this book? Do you know what
they
mean?
They just took the elevator pitch of aliens around killing hitchhikers in Scotland, yeah?
Yeah.
And made two different things. It's like it's like that story about a blind man describing an elephant, isn't it? And they end up coming up with four completely different views of something.
Yeah, we may have to do a future podcast on the differences between books and film adaptations, because, or even TV adaptations, because, you know, you've got people on both sides of the fence of you know, what was a good adaptation, what wasn't, for a lot of books, including Lord of the Rings, of course. That's the first one that comes to my mind.
Yes, yeah. And, I suppose another movie that I did catch was The Witches of Eastwick.
Yes.
Which,
my God, you are going back, aren't you?
Yes. And I really loved that movie. I thought it was great. And I was so glad that I caught it on Amazon Prime, because it was which gave me inspiration for our next theme in October, which is all about witches. Because I felt like, well, it's Halloween. Witches are a huge part of Halloween, and you know why, there's so many great films out there that happen to involve witches, and I thought, you know, why not go with focusing all about the best and the worst movie witches. I thought, quickly to sort of wrap up everything, I wanted to ask everybody, what's their sort of, who is their favorite movie witch, and is there any films about witches that are sort of lesser known that you would like to recommend to people? Joan, what about you?
Well, my favorite film witches would be a toss up between The Wicked Witch of the West and Glinda the Good Witch in Wizard of Oz. That's my favorites. But lesser known, that's a different thing. Lesser known would probably be the actual movie called The Witches by Jim Henson, with Angelica Houston as
the lead witch. Oh, I love that
movie. Which maybe, you know, that's going back some years too. Maybe that's not as well remembered now as it used to be. But wow, that was a scary movie when you were a little kid, seeing that for the first time. So that probably would be a lesser known witch that I would recommend. But you know, if you haven't seen it yet, you should go check it out.
That's such a, yeah, you're right, it's so scary, that story. I think what I always got me about the witches was the story the grandmother tells about the little girl gets stuck in the painting. That absolutely horrified me more than the witches that you see later on in the movie. Just the idea of a being trapped in a painting and growing old and your family watching you grow old and being unable to help you. It's just like, that is terrifying for a little kid.
It was a scary movie. Yeah, it was
it is a very scary movie. Back in the days where it was okay to scare kids. but yeah, I think obviously The Wicked Witch of the West is such an iconic movie witch. It's she's like really the first one that comes to mind when you say witches and movies, isn't she?
Yeah, it's hard to beat Margaret Hamilton. I mean, she was pretty much typecast for the rest of her life.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But wow, you know, she did so well.
She did. She did.
She pulled it off.
And she's terrifying as just when she's not in that green face paint. When she's sort of riding her little bicycle and the music's going.
Yeah, she's just a lovely person even on the bicycle. So yeah. So yeah, but you know, the amazing thing is, you know, you've heard the mythology where she actually had to be fed by, they had to hire a little girl to feed her because she couldn't eat with that makeup on her face.
Oh God, that was like the bravest little girl ever.
Poor child's probably traumatized.
Morgan, what about you? Do you have a favorite movie witch, and do you have a one that's sort of lesser known?
Well, so I recently rewatched Hocus Pocus.
Oh, classic.
Which I will continue to rewatch. And I mean, I love the Sanderson sisters. Everything about them is incredible. But the witches that I, a witch movie that I love that I don't think always gets the credit it deserves is Practical Magic. It's just a film that's a million years ahead of its time. And I've actually been reading this book called Witches, Sluts, Feminists. And it's about the way that witches have been put, you know, how they were depicted in history and how that transferred over to pop culture and the way that we use those terms to describe women. And Practical Magic really does an incredible job of having all of those things together. And it's about 20 some years old now, and I think it's still extremely relevant.
I have not seen this movie. I feel
so
bad.
Oh, it's a very famous movie.
Is that the Nicole Kidman one?
Nicole Kidman, Sandra Bullock, Stalker Channing, Diane Wiest. Those are the four main witches in it, and you can't go wrong with that recipe there.
No, that's a perfect lineup.
Mm-hmm. So it's, and there were several women who actually wrote this script, because there was a writing team who wrote the film. And you can tell that women were involved in crafting, for lack of a better term, for crafting this film. So then that way it translated on, you know, those feminist themes translated on screen. And it is also completely different than the book, because there is also a book called Practical Magic, and it is very much unlike the film that ended up being released.
Oh, I have to have it. I've got to watch so much. I'm making a list as we speak. If you hear me scribbling down notes, you know that's me adding it to my to-watch list. I'm going to head over to Stephen. Is there any witches that you know have given you the heebie-jeebies?
Well, there's plenty of witches that give me the heebie-jeebies, or if not particular witches, but covens and that kind of thing. So I can think of Rosemary's Baby. I can think of Hereditary, things like that. But
yeah.
My favourite witch comes from a completely different place, and it's Kiki from Kiki's Delivery Service.
Yeah,
is my second favourite Miyazaki film after Totoro, because Totoro wins everything. Period. But yeah, I know it's a friendly witch. It's a witch who's helping in the community and things like that. But it's such a delightful film. Beautifully animated, beautifully played. So she's my favourite witch. I've even got a soft spot for the awful Japanese live action version they did a few years ago, which is dreadful, but it's still charming. And I'll hopefully write about that for the site in the next month, sort of comparing the two. For a hidden gem, so if I say Jimmy Stewart and Kim Novak, most people will go to Vertigo as the sort of film that they came to. But 6 months after that, they starred in a film called Bell, Book and Candle.
Yes.
Where Kim Novak plays, it's a rom-com. Kim Novak plays a witch sort of in the modern day, and she casts a spell and he falls in love with her. You know, it's a huge amount of fun. It's got Jack Lemmon in it as well, hasn't it? It's just a huge amount of fun. And I think it may have been one of the inspirations for the TV show Bewitched. Could be wrong.
It's a fun movie. And it was actually, Bell, Book and Candle is actually, I don't know why they picked that title. It's a poem by Browning, for crying out loud. Where? Why? Yeah, what the heck? No relevance whatsoever. But it's a fun movie. It's a fun, fun movie. You should
I knew you'd know it, Joan. Yeah.
Add that to your list, babe.
I really want to catch that one. That does sound good. And I think, like, there's, like, it sounds like the perfect sort of movie that you need to sort of take your mind off things.
It's that sort of late, I think it's late, oh, I can't remember when it came out, late 1958. It's sort of one of those sort of almost wholesome comedies where the actors and the actresses are clearly having a bunch of fun.
Yeah.
Don't take it too serious. It's comfort food. But you can't go wrong with Kim Novak and Jimmy. You can't go wrong with Jimmy Stewart. Jimmy Stewart's nearly as good as Totoro, right?
Oh, awesome. I think I'll just mention a couple. I mean, for me, I've always liked the original Suspiria. I always just found that such an incredible...
Really?
Yes.
Really? Why have they got a room full of barbed wire?
I just think it...
Why have they got a room full of barbed wire? If you could explain that to me, I would love it.
Because you just never know when you might need it.
I don't know why. No, you're right. It's a beautiful, beautiful film. Yeah.
Yes. And it doesn't make a lot of sense.
It makes bugger all sense.
But that room with barbed wire
always bugs me. Because I rewatched to compare and contrast the new one with the old one. And the new one don't make much sense either.
No.
And it's not as much fun, and it's very pretty, and it does kind of
take itself a bit too seriously.
It's po-faced, isn't it? But every time I watch it, I think, oh no, this is the one with the barbed wire room, isn't it? But some extravagant death scenes.
But I just love it. It's just like how every death is just like over the top and melodramatic, and the music
What were those films that the people from the X-Files made? Final Destination films. It's like them, you know, the first person to die, the sort of the things that have to fall into place for the first person.
I know.
It's just ridiculous. It's fantastic.
But I always liked that, and I like the idea of going to this school and it's being run by witches. Just like, yeah, always watch out for that. And I also really like The Witch, Robert Eggers movie from 2015.
It's the witch.
Yeah. It's just a really annoying thing that they did. I don't know why they did that, but I find that film so creepy in terms of its atmosphere and just how it builds and builds. And I know that some people have found it slow. People had a problem with the old English, but I think it just works for me. And I do like movies that sort of feel authentic and do go for that level of realism.
He's an astonishing filmmaker.
He's amazing. The Lighthouse is one of my favourite films of last year. It's just fantastic.
Just has a different look on things and brings amazing performances out of people. And his inspirations are from different places. You know, he's inspired by, you know, 1920s German expressionistic cinema. Yes. How many people are like that anymore?
And
I wouldn't want all my films to be like that, but I just, yeah, it's a really good choice as well, Bianca, because it's just so different.
It is.
And so many things we watch these days are anodyne and are, you know, they're built to a formula. You can't accuse the two films that he's made of being.
But
like
he's
that.
Made two films and they've been absolutely wild. It's kind of like with Forgotten his name. The guy who did Hereditary and
Ari Aster.
Ari Aster.
Midsommar and Hereditary. Midsommar is one of my favourite films ever.
Yeah. And again, Witches.
Indeed.
You know, I love it. So those are two, you know, a couple of movies that I have a sort of a soft spot for, even though I guess soft spot's not really the right word, because I'm terrified of watching them both, but for almost separate reasons, but they both leave me sort of like sleeping with the lights on at night. I'm a big wuss. What can I say?
I mean, witches are fascinating because if you look at the films we've all just described are all so different. And witches are almost like, you know, like vampires are a metaphor for disease and zombies are a metaphor for anything you want them to be. witches can be such a strong metaphor for femininity, feminism. For female power and empowerment, and also, you know, oppression as well, you know, the oppression of females, that they are such a strong metaphor, but you can use them in comedies, you can use them in really dark horror movies, you can even take females out of it, like, you know, like I said, like in Rosemary's Baby, not really fit, they're just normal people, aren't they? It's a really wide-ranging horror monster. But I don't think many people go and say, oh, not another witch movie. Like they would about zombies or vampires or werewolves. It's an interesting thing, sort of social construct as well as monster.
Yes, it really is.
I think it's interesting that they could be different ethnicities as well. I mean, Penny Dreadful, the remake, the second incarnation of Penny Dreadful, the mother, Maria, technically speaking, she's a witch. She's a very religious woman, but she's also got this link to this, you know, dark spirit, whoever that is, of, you know, which brings out her ethnicity of her native South American, Mexican, you know, ancestry. And then even with the original Penny Dreadful, with Eva Green, she was, I believe she was Irish originally, half Irish. And you get into that whole, you know, the whole Wiccan, her ancestry in one of the episodes where she goes back to her home in, you know, where in the middle of nowhere. And so I think that it's interesting that women of ethnicity also could be seen as witches, quote unquote. Maybe that's something that's linked to ethnicity and feminism and the power of the woman that traditionally might not be accepted in a male dominant world. It's kind of a way of describing them when men aren't very totally comfortable with what, you know, a woman could be capable of.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the obviously the witches in American Horror Story as well, which go from being white middle class posh kids, as the Emma Roberts character, all the way down to somebody from voodoo in the deep south. Coming from somewhere else. What I will say is there has been one witch I saw in a film recently which can't possibly exist, which was Gong Li in Mulan, where in China you don't have witches, you have spirits and things like that. That really pissed me off. Calling her a
You're still like, angry about it, aren't you?
I was half thinking I could just go on to one and we could just fade out the podcast and then the next episode fade it back in again and I'll still be going on. It is a very multi-ethnic thing because it's about women and the power of women and the fear of powerful women and the mystery about women. Men used to put women in little huts in the middle of the lake because we didn't understand about periods and things like that, and a lot of the sort of the witch there's an old witch in the woods or things like that. They all come from a fear of men, of women, because they don't understand them. Not that you're witches, ladies. I just understand.
Well, if you turn into a toad tonight, you'll know that something's up.
Well, I probably won't, because I'll be a toad and have no knowledge about anything. It'll be the worst thing everyone's ever done to me, because it won't actually have any value to them, because I won't know I'm a toad.
But we would know, so it's okay.
Oh, you'll be happy, yeah.
Yeah. expect some great articles to come your way over at the site, which you can find at www.intheironleague.com. And I'll just make a little announcement. I have ordered some more merchandise. We're getting some more stickers and badges in, and get some t-shirts on the go as well. So, yeah, exciting stuff happening. And, you can give us a follow over at Twitter at Their League. Before I go, I'll just get everybody to sort of go around and just give out your Twitter handles and tell the lovely listeners where we can find you. So, Morgan, where can we find you on the Twitters?
So, my handle is at MSMLRoberts, because the MS was needed since I get mistaken for a man a lot. And I tweet a lot of the articles that we have coming out, and I'm really excited for October's theme.
Me too. Love it. And Joan, where can we find you?
My handle is at JMAMENN. And of course, you can find me at The League.
Of course, always. And also, congratulations on, being sort of joining the Filmotomy writing team.
Oh, thank you.
That's awesome.
I mean, there too now. So, yes.
Yay!
Thank you.
You're slowly dominating and taking over everything. I love it.
Oh, no one wants that.
Stephen, where can we find you?
You'll find me in a lily pad somewhere. I've turned into a toad. But on Twitter, I am at Elpevio. It's at ELPEEVIO. Don't ask why. There was a good reason once. And occasionally I write for The League. You've had two articles off me recently, B, which is...
I nearly fell off my seat.
And you'll hopefully be getting some more soon. So, yes, that's me.
Awesome. And Stephen, can you just let us all know where we can find a podcast? Because I believe that we're now on everything, aren't we?
So obviously you're listening to this podcast now. Yes. So hopefully you would be able to have found us. But we are on Spotify. We are on Apple Podcasts. We are on Google Podcasts. We're on all the Podbeans and Stitches and things like that. And I'm going to try and tell you where our newest place is without setting something off. But we are on Amazon Podcasts now, which is a new thing Amazon have just set up. And if you say to your Amazon device, Alexa, I want to listen to In Their Own League podcast, and she doesn't go off right now. There she go. She's doing it now. You'll find us then on that. I'm going to go on mute.
Not yet, Alexa. Later. Awesome. Well, and you can find me at their league, and also you can follow me on Twitter at the film B. So thank you all for joining us today for this little quick podcast. I say quick, it's probably turned into like 40 minutes or so. But anyway, thank you for listening, and we hope we gave you some good recommendations to check out. Let us know what your favorite movie witch is, and do keep being awesome, and thanks for everything. So until next time, take care. Bye.